You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Now, reflections about Dr. King and his work from a man who knew and worked alongside him. Robert Green is Dean Emeritus at Michigan State University and the former Education Director of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He was a student at San Francisco State University when he first met Martin Luther King Jr., and that was in June 1956.
Well, see, I was working for Yellow Cab part-time and while going to school. I was able to, on my lunch break, park the cab, walk through a mob of people. I worked my way through as cab drivers could do well at that time. And he had spoken. And I went up to him and introduced myself and said hello. And I told him I wanted to one day work with him. And so I was working part-time and going to school. I think at the time I was working, that was 56, I was working on my bachelor's degree. And I told him that I wanted to work with him one day. He said, well, you keep going to school. And when you finish your education, contact me and we'll, you know, perhaps get together. Now, I want to fact check just a minute, back up just a little. I got there a little earlier before walking down the aisle. So I did hear part of the speech. I want to correct that. Remember, I'm telling you about things that happened 55 years ago.
Absolutely.
So I did hear part of the speech, and I was just amazed at how eloquent and direct and how committed he was at that time to social justice, because I had been following him in the newspaper and the news media, especially with his social justice work in the state of Alabama.
And he said to you, go get your education and call me. And you did. You later wound up earning a PhD at Michigan State University. You became the first Black member of the faculty at James Madison College. And you were part of bringing Dr. King to the MSU campus in February of 1965. What do you remember about that day?
I remember picking him up at the airport, and we had a nice chat, and we reflected on the past. And he said, young man, you need to come work with me soon. I said, well, I would consider working with you because I respect what you're doing. And most important of all, you're teaching people committed to democracy and social justice not to be afraid to work for freedom. And that had an impact. So I told him I would consider it. I think John Hanna, you might want to check this out, was president of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission at that time.
And I'm seeing here in the MSU archives, John Hanna was president of MSU from 1941 to 1969 and chairman of the Commission on Civil Rights from 1957 to 1964. So this would have been the year after that, 1965.
Yes. Martin Luther King Jr. was very impressed that the president of the university was also chairman of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission with some other very distinguished national people.
So you spent 14 months as the education director.
Yeah, about that time, full time.
Yes.
And then off and on for up until his death.
With the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And you tell a very, very powerful story, Dean Green, in your book, At the Crossroads of Fear and Freedom. Tell us the story about being in the South when you were in the car with Dr. King and Andrew Young, and you saw firsthand how Dr. King, in your view, was not afraid to die.
James Belk, the owner of the Texaco station, I believe it was Grenada, was known as a very mean, angry man who did not like blacks or whites who were committed to social justice. And people were kind of fearful of him. Well, his gas station was on the corner. Coretta Scott King's cousin, we call him Oz, was driving, and he stopped at the light. Belk was pumping gas, and he saw the car, and he saw Dr. King had rolled the window down and had his elbow kind of hanging out the window, which he loved to do. Belk stopped pumping his gas, and he went up to Martin Luther King Jr., pulled out a looked like a .38, put it on his temple, and said, Martin Luther King Jr., I'm going to blow your so-and-so brains out. And King didn't flinch. He turned to James Belk with a smile and said, brother, I love you. And Belk was stunned that King wasn't fearful, that he gave the expression, "I love you." He said, "Brother, I love you. I never will forget that." And the pistol came slowly down, and he walked slowly back to the car and continued pumping gas. All of us were really stunned and fearful. And Andy Young, Ambassador Andrew Young in Atlanta, was the only one who called him Martin. We all call him Dr. King. We respected him so much. I had a PhD, but didn't matter. I still call him Dr. King. Andy said, "Martin, you're going to get us all killed." And he turned around and smiled at Andy and said, "Look," say Andrew. He called him Andrew. "Andrew, let me tell you something." He said, "John Fitzgerald had the Secret Service, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard all under his command, and they got him. And when they're ready for me, they're going to get me, and I'm not afraid." That made such an impression on me that I knew that this was a man who was not going to allow threats or any kind of danger deter him for his work in the area of social justice and brutality and the denial of voting rights in the South for a large segment of the American population who happened to be at that time, we were called Negroes.
I'm with Dr. Robert Green, the Dean Emeritus of Michigan State University and former Education Director of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, as we go through his memories of working with and knowing Dr. Martin Luther King. When you look at the civil rights movement of today, what do you see that's similar and also different than the work you were doing in the last century?
Well, I think there's a broader, by broader I mean across racial and ethnic and gender groups, set of activities that are going on that are good. I think the women's movement is a good effort. I think the effort among Hispanics on issues related to immigration, I think a large segment of the African-American community, especially the political leadership, is watching the whole effort surrounding the national leadership of immigration. We feel badly about the way children have been treated. We think that the leadership of the nation has done just a poor thing. We are a country of immigrants. I work at the gym, even though I'm 85 years of age. I still go to the gym at least 3 or 4 days a week. And I tell my colleagues at the gym, many who are retired, former white businessmen, successful. In the discussion we had one day, almost all of them had parents or grandparents who came from some other country to America. So I said, we are a country of immigrants. The only immigrant group that really was not an immigrant group were African Americans. We were brought here on the slave ships and treated in a very brutal way, with more than it's estimated 20 million blacks from Africa who lost their lives during the Middle Passage. So, I mean, if we want to talk about the kind of America that this country has become, it is a nation of immigrants. And we should be fair and just, treat everyone in a just manner. The other is fair voting. Voting rights needs to be monitored in some states. And some states is not an issue. That's what Dr. King gave a lot of time to. But a year before his death, Dr. King's death, he wrote Lyndon Baines Johnson, President Johnson, a note. And Andy Young and Dr. King met with President Johnson. He mentioned, "Well, maybe I should try to pass an anti-lynch bill." No, Dr. King said, "No, what we want is a civil rights bill." And that's what we eventually got. And you know what's so amazing? I am a sports fan, and I follow Michigan State sports very much. And when I see blacks playing for Ole Miss, football that is, and basketball too, because Mississippi was really a very brutal and angry state for blacks from a civil rights standpoint. Even today, at my old age of 85, I'm amazed to see black males playing sports for Ole Miss, no conflict, attending class, walking across campus. Because when I was working for Martin Luther King back in the 60s, a black person did not go on the campus of Ole Miss unless you were going there to clean. working as a cleaning person, a maid or a janitor. That's all you could do. You didn't dare put a foot on the campus. And so times have changed. But as Martin Luther King Jr. would say, we yet have a lot to do and a long ways to go. The fair treatment of everyone in America must be a major goal. Social justice was always a major goal. That's why I enjoy my work so much at Michigan State. It gave me a chance to grow and develop and work for freedom. Even when I was at Michigan State, I still, every now and then, would hop on a plane and go south and work with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And the college, James Madison College, is one of the colleges within the university committed to social justice. And that's what I'm here doing today. I'm giving a lecture sponsored by several units, the School of Social Work, the President's Office, James Madison College, are all supportive of my work, and I appreciate that very much. So Michigan State's a great place, and I really appreciate you giving me an opportunity to do a shout-out for a university that brought me in and gave me a chance to get a PhD, which I finished in December, I think, of 1962, and allowed me to go on and continue to work for social justice. The university never said, don't do this. Don't do that when it related to social justice on campus, off campus in East Lansing, and in the larger society working with Martin Luther King Jr.
Dr. Green, we're asking people all around the state the same question, but this is my chance to ask someone who was an associate of Dr. Martin Luther King. And here is the question. How would Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. feel about America today?
His concern would be to do what we can to make sure that there is a strong social justice strategy nationally here in America, that black, white, Hispanics, Native Americans, Asians, that we all come together and work together as brothers and sisters. Now, Martin Luther King Jr. said, it's not enough to talk about brotherhood. I want you to be my brother. It's not enough to talk about sisterhood. I want you to be someone's sister, and brother in the name of social justice. So King would, he would be amazed at some of the progress that's been made in America, especially Barack Obama as president. I don't think King dreamed that would ever happen. I never dreamed that we would have an African-American as president of the United States. That was a major step, and I think it gave hope to a lot of other young minorities and women today. Look at the people who are declaring their intention to run for president of the United States. I think many are saying, if Barack Obama did it in America, I can do it. And so you have women, minority women, majority women, minority men, some declaring their intentions to possibly run for the top leadership position in this country. I think that would be amazing to Martin Luther King Jr., but King would have a keen eye on how young people are treated in America. King would be looking at the treatment of women in our society, the treatment of immigrants, the treatment of the poor. So King would be surprised at the progress we've made, but he would be disappointed in some of the things that are happening today from a leadership standpoint. King would never think that a president, any president, would make negative comments about other political leaders, about women, about minorities. King knew Lyndon Baines Johnson would never do that. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President Bush, H.R. Bush, they would never utter things demeaning to a population, demeaning to a person. They would never do that. King would be disappointed in that.
Robert Green, Dean Emeritus, Michigan State University. I want to thank you very, very much for speaking with us on Stateside today.
You're welcome. And may all of you out there in Radio Land have a happy and a pleasant and a good, happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Thank you all.